Hey there. Welcome to the Unpresentable Parts podcast, your go-to spot for conversations that matter, hosted by Tim Blake and Titus Walelo. We're breaking down barriers and building bridges, one story at a time. Tim and Titus invite you into a space where the vulnerable becomes powerful. Ready to join the conversation? Let's dive in.
Well, hello. Welcome to the Unpresentable Parts podcast. My name is Tim Blake, and here we aim to make the unpresentable presentable, and we've got a special guest today. That is my wife, the other half of the Unpresentable Parts podcast, host of the Eve Edition. Her name is?
Samantha Blake, or Sam.
The Samantha Neptune Blake. My wife of now 24 and a half years, coming up on 25 years. And yep. Listen, it's been some work, boy, I tell you. Anyway.
Work for him. Work on him.
Work on me, for real. But in any case, we're gonna do a quick pod. We are back from sabbatical, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We were having some scheduling issues. Titus wanted to hop on with us. He wanted to kind of do an interview thing, but this is long story short, here we are. But as normal, let me just introduce the purpose of this podcast. We have used 1 Corinthians 12:24 as a basis for the podcast. Is basically the parts of the body that are less presentable, we treat with special modesty. And so our aim is to be able to have some conversations that we normally don't get to have in church fully or in a congregation or from the pulpit. Both Sam and I are ministers at our congregation there in Hartford called The Heart. And there's just a lot of stuff you can't really dive into because they're nuanced conversations. Some are a bit more sensitive than others. And so it's very tough in a normal church setting to have the conversations. And so we aim to make the unpresentable presentable during our time. And we normally start out with what's unpresentable about us today. And I'll start and I'll give my wife an opportunity to share after I share. I think for me, I just turned 56 years old yesterday.
Oh, where's the congratulations?
I have to hit my own applause button anyway. But yeah, I turned 56 yesterday, and actually, I feel pretty good. I think, you know, besides needing to lose weight and all that stuff, you know, I'm all right. Although I would say, feeling mortality. I had a good friend pass away last week, and feeling, you know, your own mortality. It feels like there's a clock on you. And that may just be my own thing. My wife does not subscribe to that. But I think there's a level of anxiety you feel with, man, I am running out of time to do whatever it is I'm supposed to do or that I want to do. So that's my unpresentable. Wifey?
I think my unpresentable today is at this moment, it's learning how to, I was recently diagnosed with Sjogren's, and it's been very interesting to navigate on a day-to-day basis. I never know what I'm going to be feeling during my day. So I think the unpresentable part for me is really navigating this. And I'm wanting to navigate it with joy and because I feel hopeful, joyful, all of those things. But I think the unpresentable part for me right now is accepting this. This is where I am. This is this accepting this and learning how to navigate life differently. As Tim talks about feeling the mortality, I think it's feeling accepting chronic illness.
We're going to get into that in just a minute as we dive into kind of some of the lessons we learned from sabbatical. But also, I'm just grateful she didn't say her unpresentable part was being mad at me because this is kind of a spontaneous last minute thing. So we've been
I
planning.
thought about it. I thought about it, but I gave you grace because it's one day post birthday.
My birthday. And an interesting fact, fun fact, Titus and I have the same exact birthday. And so Titus's birthday, we share the 9th of November together. And so, which is kind of cool. That's probably why whenever we don't get along, whenever we bump in heads, it's because we're the same in a lot of ways. But we came back from a 4 month sabbatical, which we began June 1st of this year. And the reason we needed a sabbatical, but if you're not familiar, the whole idea of Sabbath or is rest. It's taking a time out, basically a time out with God. And God mandated in the Bible, rest is so much a part of the scripture and how we're to navigate our walk with God and kind of live in this life. And so we have been working in Hartford here for 18 years. We got here in August of 2007, and we began leading the entire church in 2017. And when I spoke with our elders about, when they asked us to lead the church, one of the things I did ask them or shared with them is that we were probably going to need a sabbatical in about 3 to 5 years. So year three was the pandemic. Literally the summer hit March of 2020, and so that pushed it back. And then in 2021, as the pandemic extended and we had several changes on our staff, on our church staff, and so that pushed it back. And then we had some other just church drama as things happen. And so last year, 2024, was a year to really help the church stabilize a bit. And refocus, and we were able to, and we're really, really grateful we're able to do it this year. And so we brought someone in and they spoke about Sabbath, Brother Johnny Rivera from New Jersey, Central Jersey. He came in, taught a bit, shared with the church and our leaders, the leadership team, and just the church in general. And then we started June 1st, and we had suggestions that we should probably take 6 months. Our original plan was 3 months. Some people suggested 6 months, but we just didn't have the infrastructure. We have one other minister on staff with us. We have a great leadership team, and honestly, just a phenomenal church. And I was really proud they really did well during the break. But we did 4 months. We started June 1st. And actually, Sam, I'll if you don't mind sharing kind of how you what how your perception of Sabbath was prior, and then how things were for you going in, and then we'll dive in a little bit from there.
Oh, I think for me, I am definitely type A, in my, and I also need a map. I need a map to do well. So going into sabbatical, I had this plan and this map about what books I was going to read, what I was going to focus on women's ministry wise, so that when I came back, I'd have this whole vision. And so I really went into sabbatical just thinking I was going to have all this free time to silence all the noise of the day-to-day of ministry so that I can focus on really coming back with this vision and this plan and this, yes, I was going to have this whole new view of how women's ministry worked. And that was me going in. Needless to say, that was not what occurred during sabbatical, because I've got a whole different experience. So, but that was my vision or my thought process of going in, is that I just get to take out the day-to-day of ministry so I can focus on the bones of it and rebuild.
Now, going in, when we went in, what was your understanding of what a sabbatical was?
I think based on the teaching and the different things I've heard over time and just read, I did think a sabbatical was time to rest, but maybe, you know, people write books during their sabbatical. People just, again, I think a lot of what I prepared for is what I thought a sabbatical was. So I did think it was a time for clarity and a time for connecting with God in a way where it wasn't, you weren't going in with everybody else in mind. There was that, if I'm going to sabbatical, I am going in to really be close enough to God to be able to hear him so that I can be prepared to do the things again that I think he's calling me to. So that was, I think, going in, what I thought is that I'm going in to clear the noise away, to really connect with God, to reconnect, to heal, all of that. But I think I just, what I thought and the actuality of what happened, it just didn't, it didn't connect. There was a disconnect somewhere. Even if I knew in my head, I think I knew in my head what it was. But there was a disconnect along the way, because it's obviously what ended up happening is what true sabbatical needed to be for me.
Yeah.
If that answers that question.
Oh, it does. It's like marriage. You think you have an idea of what it is. You do your best study, but you don't know until you get in it. And you're like, oh, wow, this is real.
Yeah.
For me, I think the idea of rest is foreign to me. Again, in our fellowship of churches, like we've only adopted this practice over the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, primarily in my experience within our fellowship. Someone took a break as a precursor to being let go from their position or being moved on somewhere else. And so it was never a positive thing. A lot of our ethos in our fellowship, from my experience, was next man up. One of my favorite ministers and the guy that mentored me, his phrase was, you know, I'll rest when I die. And man, we would just go. We'd actually be in Bible studies with people, and we would laugh because he would literally fall asleep during these Bible studies because he was going so hard. And I thought, that's the way a Christian, a minister is supposed to be, and that's what I wanted to be. And so in any case, you know, over time, I think my wife, Sam, has been a lot better with taking breaks and enjoying the whole idea of recreation of recreating herself. She's had hobbies. She writes, does poetry. My wife has fun. She is the fun person. And so I was always battling any accusation that I would ever be called lazy. And so I really fought against it. And one of the things that was really enlightening for me was the fact that as I began to think about, as we were preparing the church and how we were preparing to go, I realized I had never taught on rest. And you can always tell what a church's weakness is or what a minister's weakness is by what they don't preach. So often if I'm looking at, okay, what is my weakness? I look at things that I never preach about. A few years ago, it was the Holy Spirit. I never had taught about the Holy Spirit. I'm like, I'm supposed to be a Spirit-led minister and never taught about the Holy Spirit. I got a problem. And so anyway, and looking at rest, you know, starts in Genesis 2 where God ceased from his work, and then on and on all throughout scripture, all the way up to Jesus and him taking time away, him telling when he's with his disciples, come to a quiet place. You need some rest. That whole idea. And so I started to understand it more. It's like, no, God is serious about this. He mandates it in the Old Testament to cease from your work, to take a break. And so for me, I think going in, I didn't have much of a map. Most of the people that I knew had written books or they had gone on retreats, but they also didn't have children in the home. And so we've got our youngest son still in high school. So that was some of the stuff we had to navigate and the timing, why we chose the summer. There were some things that we had to work out, but it was absolutely necessary for us. I think going in, I crawled in, literally crawled in. I was very concerned that I was burnt out. because just ramping up energy to, you know, do a lesson and all that stuff. And then I, you know, kind of crashed and you ramp back up. And it was like, it just wasn't healthy. So I think for me, and I've shared this with our, you know, the church, that I really felt like I was concerned that maybe I had gone too hard. And all the stuff that, you know, Sam shared, I felt the same. I was like, okay, I got books I'm going to read, you know, got this counseling, you know, I wanted, you know, counseling and all this stuff you wanted to do during the time. And that just felt like more pressure. And so I said, okay, no sabbatical, coach. Let me, you know, I tried the counseling thing and the first counselor didn't work out. And it was just a problem. It was just problematic. And so God became my counselor, which I felt for me was super necessary. But for the first month, the direction was just rest. Don't do anything. Don't try to plan anything. Just rest. And that was disorienting for me. I felt lost. There's, you know, some periods of depression, feeling like, what am I even here for? What is life? Because I don't have hobbies. I was in the gym every day, but I'm not training for anything, just to work out. But there's feelings of being lost, and so that was tough.
You know, I think it was disorient.
Where
yours was the disorienting and not having hobbies, I think it's disorienting for me. And as I did have hobbies and I did have a lot of things that I enjoyed doing, but what I found was that first month and a half, I had nothing to give. Even in hobbies, I had no enjoyment. And really, I think it's a lot of what you said. It was depression. It was depression from going and doing what, you know to do, you know to give. It's you're giving and you're giving and you're giving and you're, I liken it to what I realized was happening to me at the, coming into the sabbatical, was that I was healing while I was grieving, while I was serving, while I was hurting, while I was, there was no time where it was just a space of solitude. And I think when I got into that space of solitude, it was actually, it was very disorienting. It was confusing at times. It felt like this huge abyss. And it almost like you're tumbling down. You don't, there's not really a bottom. And I think that's what that first month and honestly month and a half felt like. It was just a lot of moments of complete silence because there was not a desire to do anything because I couldn't read. I couldn't write. I just didn't realize how empty, how depleted I had gotten.
And what was it? You mentioned something recently about that Tyler said to you that he noticed. Or Tyler's our oldest son.
Yeah, both him and my younger son said it first. Tristan said it first, but then Tyler also said it. But I think one of the things that's further on into our sabbatical, my youngest son just said, "Mom, you're so calm."
Oh, like, no. The first part about where you were sitting. We'll get to that.
Oh, that first part. Oh, yeah. I literally would get up in the morning, go into our backyard, sit in this one spot. And my oldest son, you know, he'd go out, he'd come back, and he'd be like, "Mom, you are still in the same, you've been in the same spot all day. You, like, have you moved? Did you move?" Because literally I would be there from morning till evening. And when I say morning till evening, I really mean morning till evening. It's not an exaggeration. And not talking, not, it's just complete silence and just staring into the into the backyard, really. I can't describe if time passed, what time passed. I don't remember. And if you were to ask me what I thought about, what I don't remember, I just know that that was a lot of what I did that first month. It's just sitting in one spot in my backyard. And I think God did a lot of healing in that time. Not I think, I know he did. But that silence and think of that being still and know, be still and know that I am God. This was a time of stillness that I had never experienced that kind of stillness before.
And you shared, one of the things you shared is that since becoming a Christian as a campus student, you literally went from, as a campus student, you run around leading your campus ministry and then coming into paid ministry along with serving a benevolent organization, Hope Worldwide. You were doing that. And then
Well,
from
yeah, I
there,
mean,
yeah, go for it.
so I think in that silence, it was there was a lot of reflection, and it wasn't probably until the second half of the next month that I was able to start really reflecting. But I think sitting in silence, there was a lot of realization, and to what you're alluding to is that when I became a Christian. I literally, out of once I came out of the waters of baptism, it was like, okay, so now you're leading the campus ministry if you're a co-leader. And I never had opportunity in those early years of my Christianity to just be someone who came to church and sat in a pew. You know, it was out of the waters of baptism, was helping lead a campus ministry. Within a year and a half, I was working 60 hours for Hope Worldwide. And I was also doing ministry at the same time, full-time ministry as an intern in the campus ministry. Within a 4-year period, I moved to Los Angeles to work in a singles ministry there, got
She
engaged, got married.
moved she moved to be with daddy. I mean, me. She moved to be with me.
Got engaged, got married. Started while we were single, we started leading a ministry together. Working with marrieds, working with, you know, it was a lot. And I think it was that's from 1997 to 2003. Just that was ministry and Hope Worldwide, the nonprofit, and moving and getting married. And it's just a constant. And then I think in 2003, there was just the challenges that came up within our church and all of those things, and having to deal with people's hurts. But I came out of the ministry and started teaching in the inner city in Los Angeles. I mean, I when I say I taught in the inner city, I taught very high stress. You know, you're if my children, if a student doesn't show up for class. I'm not thinking, oh, they're having a bad day or they're sick. You know, my thoughts are, oh, wow, are they alive? Are they in prison? Were they jumped into a gang? You know, it's just you carry all that stress in your body. And I think so. I went from ministry to another high stress. And again, you're switching gears, right? When you're in education, it's not so far from ministry. You are having to be a counselor, especially in an inner city school, when you're having daily shootings, daily, you know, kids are being killed in the streets. You've got children coming, you've got to be the psychologist. They, you know, in the inner city, they're not sending psychologists in. These black and brown kids aren't getting counselors that other schools are getting. So the libraries are a mess. So you're a counselor, your teacher, your mother, you just so many roles. And
And
then I think,
your next transition.
and then we transition and we eventually move. So it's a 3 years, three something years, or 4 years later, we moved to Orlando. And it's really nice because now I'm at a suburb, school in the suburbs. And it's just like that breath. And then I'm pregnant within
Than a year,
months.
less than a year, yeah.
Less than a year, give birth to
And
my fir you know, give birth to our first, and that
was a lot
was.
of work. It was a lot of work getting there.
It took us a while to get pregnant, but even in our pregnancy, then we had there was that initial risk because there was the concern that I would miscarry, and it was just very scary. And then there was a little bit of reprieve, and then, great. And then we get the call to come back into ministry within less than a year of having given birth. And we
You're
come
right
back
back
into
in it.
ministry. And so that's, I've been a Christian, what, 90, 97 to this year is how many years? I'm so bad with that.
Oh, less than 30, 28, 28 years.
28 years. And of those 28 years, 24, 25 of those years was ministry.
And even when we weren't in paid ministry, when we say ministry, we mean paid ministry. Even when
Well,
we weren't.
25 of those weren't in paid ministry, but all of it was in.
Were serving in some capacity, helping the church.
Yes.
And so, you literally there's been no break. And so all of a sudden you don't have any meetings to go to. You're not counseling anyone. All the stuff, you're just everything's just void. And it's good. It was good. I think for myself, I took a lot of walks, a lot of walks, even with my dog, and just prayed. And a lot of tears, because during I think the 3 years before we actually were able to take sabbatical, we both lost some friendships that were very valuable to us, and there were things that we experienced that we had never experienced before that were very, very painful, and trying to navigate all that while maintaining your marriage and being present parents, and
Keyword present parents.
present, which again I know I failed
It,
at several times.
yeah, but there's a lot of suppression of our own pain and our own emotions because we're having to, you're not even, you can't even be at home in your own home because you're on high alert to ensure that, I know for me, to ensure that I'm not adding unnecessary trauma or stress to my children who were also experiencing their own level of trauma through what was happening with our relationships, some of our relationships.
And so, anyway, all that being said, when you take a break, you don't really have a choice I believe if you're doing it correctly, you don't have a choice. And so all that stuff comes to the surface. And so, a lot of good time that I had not talked to God about some things that I felt with him. And then, we got to. I got to read some great books. And again, some of this has been informed, like God's been trying to get my attention for a while. There's a great book by Ruth Haley Barton. It's entitled Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership Through the Crucible of Ministry. Another one, Sacred Rhythms. A friend of mine, Karen Ellis, my girl in Los Angeles, sent me a book just randomly, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. She sent that to me like 2 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm like, God's been trying to get my attention for a while on this. And so that first month it went great. And then I think one of the pivotal moments for us was our trip to Tampa. We got an opportunity. Friends of ours, Stephen and Gina Mitchell, they live in Tampa. They were going to a conference and they were like, hey, our place is free. We had some airline points. So we got on a plane and got out. And that was good. That was good. We overate sushi on the first night, an all-you-can-eat sushi place. And then we didn't eat for a day and a half after that. But we had probably, one of the most vulnerable conversations we ever had in our 24-plus years of marriage.
Yeah.
And Sam, I don't know if you want to share any about that, how that came about
I
or no.
think, yeah, I think just without there's gonna could be another time where we would delve more into that. Because it was, I think it's something that would help many marriages. But I do think the thing I realized it showed up in my marriage, but I realized that most of my life I had never felt chosen. I had never felt like someone chose me. It just, and I felt like in our marriage, what I felt like is just, we had been set up on a blind date. We We did really great in ministry. We were good ministry-wise together. It just everything just kind of worked and fell into place. And so it was just kind of like, not that this is what it was, but the only way I can explain it, it was good plug and play, right? It was good plug and play. And so what I didn't realize is my own wounds from never feeling chosen, never feeling like I was someone's first choice. Rather than, oh, it just works, or, and so I think being able to express that to Tim and honestly, really connecting for me was very painful because I didn't realize how deep that wound ran for me, and it also helped me to see why I performed so much in ministry, and I gave honestly, I went so hard in ministry, and why in many ways I put myself second, thinking I was not worth first choice because I didn't I yeah I don't, and again that's a deeper conversation, but that's one of the things that I was able to have that conversation with Tim, and it was super. I don't know. I just coming from that conversation, I literally felt this. If you've ever on Shrek or when he talks about, we're like an onion, and you just peel the layers away. When they're walking in the grass and he talks about being, I don't know if it says life is like an onion or we're
Not a
like an
Shrek.
onion.
I haven't watched Shrek, but
Oh,
I
it
can
was
tell you one
really
quote.
deep what he said. It was like this, yeah, I love Shrek.
So a
But
donkey? I don't know.
yeah, but it was that, it was those layers that just came away, but they came away with lots of tears. But I left Tampa with I left that conversation with Tim with a freedom that I don't think I ever in my whole life experienced as an adult. It was a level of freedom that I don't know if there's only one place I can tell you that I felt that, and that was in a tree in the Caribbean. Anybody who knows me knows I talk about this cashew tree I would sit in the Caribbean. It was my favorite tree. I would sit in there, pick cashews and bite on the fruit and throw it away. I would see the ocean. It's just like my place of peace. It's if you tell me where's my peace or my happy place, that would be it. And I think after that conversation with Tim on during that time in Tampa, it was like that wave washed over, and I if I could envision it, I could say I felt like, oh, I'm sitting in that tree with my legs dangling, and I'm free. I'm me. I'm 100, 1,000% me. And now I don't have anything that there's no part of me that's hiding anymore. I choose me, and I think that was it. I chose me, and I chose me. In that moment, because I shared what I wanted. I shared what I felt, what I wanted, what I desired. And it was the first time in my life I chose me. And so now, in leaving that space, because I chose me, I now know the position I want to be in my relationships. And I can communicate that.
And even I think you've shared coming back to the work of the ministry, it just frames things, frames boundaries and all that kind of stuff. I think you shared that, so.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to because I chose me, I know the order of relationships and the boundaries and the healthy ones, and I can ask for what I need in relationships, but I can also communicate what I can't be and what I can be, how I can show up and how I would like others to show up, and in a very healthy way, not a I think in the past I would not have been able to do it with such clarity, and it maybe would have been off-putting, and maybe done in a way where someone would be offended, and I'd move to fix it really quickly versus find out, oh, why are you offended? I don't understand. I think being able to choose me allows me a space where I can be curious about someone else's pain or someone else's offense versus feeling like I'm the reason because I'm not worth it.
And I know again, I know even some of the comments I've heard since we've come back, you know, people see you more at peace and you're able to be the best version of yourself. So God can use the best version of you.
Yeah.
So, and I think for me, I've seen that in you already, which is encouraging. I think that time for me, again, like I said, you can get so busy and, you know, you can fill up time and you can fill up time and space for those type of conversations, even revelations. You don't really understand what you're feeling until you stop. And hearing, you know, Sam share that and hearing you share that, babe, I think for me it was very painful because I think for me, my thing is there are dynamics that you feel, there are dynamics that you see, but because things are busy, you don't have time to get into it. So it's easy to push them to the side. Now there's no pushing it to the side. And I think for me, deep down, I was like, I think my wife has some resentment toward me. There's some resentments in there. And we were driving on the day after that. So we were driving somewhere and, you know, I was asking some questions just so to make sure that everything was out. And I was waiting for that word resentment. And I heard that word and I was like, ugh, I didn't want to hear it, but it was good to be able to hear it. And it wasn't volatile. There was no, I didn't feel attacked or anything like that. Honestly, I was grateful that, you know, Sam had the space to share freely. And so it's very good. For me, I think, I had so many things to still work through. I think on the ministry side of things, some of the books that I read really helped give me some clarity. I was recommended a series of books by Michael Burns called by this author, Andrew Root. And Michael Burns is a theologian. We call them teachers in our fellowship, but he's a, you know, really good theologian. We've had him on the pod and we've been on his pod. And I recommended these books by Andrew Root, Faith Formation in a Secular Age, Pastor in a Secular Age, Ministering to a Church That Doesn't Need God, and Congregation in a Secular Age. And those are very, very good books. And they helped me to understand some of the things that I was feeling, my frustrations about ministry. And I realized that I wasn't ministering. I wasn't really ministering. I was managing a business. And that's not what God called me to. And that's not what moves my spirit and my soul. That's not why, you know, gave up any prospect of, you know, another career or even a financial success for this thing to serve in ministry. And so I realized there's a lot of great things that I learned out of that. But I think on a more personal note, I had a lot of frustrations with God. I felt frustrated with God, but then I realized, no, I was frustrated with myself because I know God can do anything. And I was just frustrated because I wasn't getting what I wanted quick enough. And I had to really work through and navigate and grow up in a lot of ways, grow up in that. And so that was helpful. Visiting other congregations. We visited several congregations outside of our fellowship. And that was very enlightening for me. I didn't grow up, you know, I grew up we went to an AME church, my grandparents' church, an African Methodist Episcopal and a Baptist church on my mom's side, maybe Christmas and Easter, that's it. And so just doing that Christmas, Easter stuff, I had no real concept of church. I was punished. I had to go to Seventh-day Adventist church with my sister for 3 months. And I said, I'd never go to church again. And so it wasn't until I became a Christian at 19. This was my first real church experience where I was involved. I studied the Bible. You know, God gave me the opportunity to become a Christian. He called me, I responded, and been doing this thing. But one of the things about our fellowship in particular, we had an exceptionalist view of ourselves. I think even at one point it was taught we were the only church, like we were the only ones saved. Now, over time, we matured out of that because that was clearly false. But visiting different churches and sitting and listening to lessons, that was the other thing for me. I had to learn how to just be a church member, go to and listen to a lesson and hear the word without critiquing how the message was delivered. And, we ministers can become American Idol judges. That's our curse. You pray for your ministers, please. It's so hard for us just to be church members because Sunday is work for us. So any case, but it's good hearing some of these lessons. And some of these lessons I heard, I was like, man, they were really good. No, I preached something very similar. You could literally preach the same message in our congregation for a lot of them. And they're all battling. American Christianity is going through the same thing. The self-focus, the lack of volunteerism. People are fatigued. And so they're calling for volunteers for their churches to serve, usher, to, work with the kids, all this stuff. So a lot of stuff, the same stuff is happening in our church. And I was like, oh, okay. This is what we're experiencing. It's not me, because I normally feel like, oh, anything's wrong in our church, it's me. But there's some larger cultural things that we're fighting against. And obviously fighting against, as it says in Ephesians 6, these demonic systems and dark forces and all that stuff, which is very true. But a lot of people are going through this stuff together. So in any case, it was very good for me. It was freeing. I think it was awkward for me, not because the church has been family for me in a lot of ways. I have a very small family, so the church is family. So being disconnected from the church, we didn't go to any of our own services or anything. We peeked in online occasionally, but looking at different services around our fellowship of churches was encouraging online, and it was very good. It was very, very good.
I'll
go for it.
Oh, I would say that one of the things for me visiting other churches and outside of our fellowship, what it did for me was really solidified, oh, I love my fellowship. And I 100% am in the right place, not out of judgment, but realizing that, it was interesting. I just saw a lot of different things that were being done in different fellowships. I thought, oh, wow, these are some of the things we threw away with the bathwater, that some of these younger fellowships are doing a lot of the things that we once did. And because of the challenges within our movement, kind of threw those things away and realizing, oh, wait, these things are really key and they're really important. And it's important to really even revive some of these in a healthy way, but it definitely made me feel very grateful for the fellowship I have. And again, it wasn't out of judgment. I think when I went to those churches, honestly, I felt welcomed. I felt, ushered in, and I enjoyed being in a worship setting with other people who were honestly worshiping and connecting with God. So it also helped me to see that, oh, when I listened carefully and I heard the message that, you know what, it's important that in the family of believers, we really, really take the time and really understand that many of us are capable of helping someone come to Christ. That is, we take it for granted in our fellowships. But I think being able to be outside of it for a short period of time reminded me, oh, wow, what we have is, it's a gem. And we really need to fan that into flame.
Yeah, we definitely, I think we take for granted just the dynamic nature of our fellowship. And so, again, you've been in it for 36 years, like myself, coming up on 37 years, you just feel like, oh, it's just, but like, no, it's pretty amazing. And it's easy, I think Satan, John 10:10, he tries to steal, kill, and destroy even our appreciation for what we've got. So we treat the extraordinary as just ordinary. And that's always the case. Marriage, go on and on. But in any case, so we're going to come to a close here in a few, but I think in coming back, I think and if you're ministering or watching this, I think there's always going to be anxiety. I think for me, I felt the anxiety Because people were like, man, we can't wait for you to come back and you're going to give us all this great insight in the new you and you're going to take us these new places. I'm like, bro. And I appreciate the grace in the church because I spoke for the first time this past week. And, you know, just taking your time not to jump in and just blah, everything. You may feel like that right now if you're listening or watching this, but I think that was some anxiety that I had. I think the other thing, and I don't want to neglect this, one of the things that I prayed about a lot was, God, do you still want us here? Do you still want us in this space? We've been here 18 years. My fear is that we would be too comfortable because we are very comfortable in our relationships. It's the best place I've ever been. Sam and I both, we've never lived in a place this long, right, babe?
Yeah, like, that's correct.
Even before I was a Christian, I never lived in a space this long. Mm-hmm. And even in this home, we've been in our own home now for over a decade. And so it's a very special place, a place I never thought I would be coming from San Diego and living in places like DC and San Francisco, LA. Never thought I'd be here. And it's just amazing. And so I was like, God, are we too comfortable? Can we, you know, can we still lead? You know, or can people still hear our voices? Because I, you know, trust me, people have heard all my stories. But so, you know, it's just things like that. And so really praying about that and really inquiring of God and being surrendered. And I think that was one thing, Sam, after we had that talk in Tampa, that was the first time you were like, you realized you said you lost your sense of adventure and you were up for anything. You were up for anything. And I was like, uh-oh. Mm-hmm. I was like, the last time Sam said, man, I'm open, I'm surrendered, we end up in Hartford. And so I was like, uh-oh, okay, God. You know, but, you know, I think, and coming back to church and just the grace and the encouragement we received and seeing the growth and maturity of the church was so encouraging. And I think for both of us, we realized that, okay, the track we're going, we're building in the right direction and God is still, he has us here. There is work for us to do here for as long, again, and we don't know what your perspective is on fellowship, but I don't believe personally that your role is, we have permanent roles. They're not in perpetuity. No, I don't believe I'm an evangelist forever or, you know, you're an elder forever. Sometimes we serve for periods of time and then we go on, we still serve God, but maybe not in the same role. And I'm good with that. And so I'm, you know, so I feel like we're in a good place. I think someone commented that we're very much at peace. We seem very calm and at ease. And I think we both feel that the fact that we're both now 56 and, well, anyway.
You don't have to say mine. You don't have to say mine.
Hey, we make the unpresentable presentable here though.
Yes, that's okay.
So in case, but we just wanted to hop on. I think the one thing I would just say is, if you're in a fellowship and you guys have not adopted a sabbatical policy, do that. Joel Peed, who's currently leading our church in Dallas, they have tons of great stuff online regarding. It's Joel Peed, P-E-E-D. And he's got a lot of great stuff on Sabbath, sabbatical. Ruth Haley Barton is an author and some great stuff. Dallas Willard. I'm sure there's a bunch more. Those are just the ones that I have read and the ones that I know. But you got to encourage a minister, especially if they've been going at it for a long time. A lot of moral failures that you'll see in ministers, a lot of where, honestly, mental health stuff where people just crash is because people have not practiced taking rest. You can go, you can have a vision and go so hard and not realize, no, God's got this. This is God's work. It'll be fine without you. And if it's not fine without you, you're doing something wrong. It's too reliant upon you. So any case.
Yeah, I would say even before you close off on that, I think as Tim talks about the ministers, I think it's important to understand that the ministers' wives though it may seem that they don't have the weight, depending on your fellowship or depending on the role of the women, I think it's important to understand, especially if there are children in the home, they have done a lot of the rearing and a lot of the home care and an understanding that it may not always be visible, but the minister's wives do a lot to free up their husbands. And there's a lot that they take on that you don't always see. And so it is there can be the, what Tim talked about, the silent resentments or the, you know, even at the, with the church for kind of having more of their husbands than they get at times. And I think it's important to recognize they need the sabbaticals too. Because the loss of identity happens. You become a wife, you become a minister's wife, you become a minister's wife, and then the children and the children's wife, you know, you don't, many times don't even get introduced by your name anymore. You get introduced as the pastor's wife. And so I think it's just really important to recognize that it's actually really important for both your minister and their wife to get that thought about having a sabbatical. Like that is I find it vital. Now that I've experienced it, I find it vital.
Yeah. And it's the, in reality, well, in our fellowship, I know I was just with some ministers and we were talking about it, and there's some ministers who've been going for a long time. And I brought it up. I was like, oh, you should do it. And they were like, nope, not me. I was like, wow, that's, they've been doing longer than me. So, and I know there are some high pressure things, but in any case, the quote that I wanted to read, it's an unattributed quote, and it reads, rest is resistance and renewal is obedience. And I like that. It's rest is resistance. We're under so much pressure in our lives. And this goes for everyone. Anyone that will follow Jesus, there are so many things clamoring for our time and attention. 24-hour news, you know, even sports, 24 hours, there's entertainment, social media, there's all this stuff all the time, along with the pressures of work. And if you got, you know, if you're single, you feel maybe feel the pressure, you want to get married, or you got to get financially secure or get out of debt. You know, you're thinking about retirement if you're married, or how to raise your kids and getting them into college. You got in sports and all this stuff, all these things, 1,000 emails a day, going and going and going. Rest is imperative. You got to step back. Satan will try to kill you. Our culture will try to kill you. Still, just something that the joy that's there, and that rest is a resistance to our culture and renewal. It is obedience to God. Like, God wants us to step away with him, even to do the fun stuff with him that we like. You know, I don't care what it is. You know, I know somebody that loves to make TikToks, you know, that kind of thing. And they're good. But, you know, they like to make TikToks with scriptures and that kind of thing with their doggy and all that stuff. Whatever it is that God has for you, do that thing, as long as it's healthy, but rest. Cool. Wife, any last thoughts before we disconnect?
No. I think your quote encapsulated it.
Excellent. Okay. Well, love you. We will have another episode at a minimum next week. And so we love you. And thanks for time. Bye.
Thanks for your time. Bye.